Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of 99% Effective. Hi, Jen.
Hello. I'm good, thank you. How you doing?
I'm good. So we have another great episode today with another DDS topic, but how was your St. Patrick's Day?
It was uneventful. Yeah. I am not Irish. I'm Polish, unless it involves pierogies.
Yeah. I'm Italian and Swedish, so I do make corned beef and cabbage at least once a year. So that's about it, though. We don't do much on St. Patrick's Day.
Can you eat it, though? You can make it, but is it good?
I do, yes.
Okay.
I make it. Mine is, I make it kind of, have you ever heard of Minest?
I have not.
Okay, so that's an Italian meal that they call it Lucky Minest. You have it on New Year's Day, and it's it's got like meat in it and some schkadal, which is like a cabbage type thing. So I make mine like very soupy. So it's in the broth. So it's not dry. So that's how we do ours. I do it once a year. A tradition.
My sounds delicious.
It. Yeah. So, but we're going to get right into it and we're going to let Jen introduce our speaker, and we hope this is really informal and get a lot of good information.
Sounds good.
We're here with Brian Smith today, Assistant Regional Director of Individual and Family Supports at DDS. And if that name sounds familiar, it's because Brian was our guest speaker last month and we invited him back for round two. Today we are going to be discussing the DDS level of need, or as many of you may know it, the LON. So Brian, we briefly talked about the level of need, the LON, in our last episode. For our listeners, could you please refresh them with a more detailed description of what the LON is?
Well, thank you. I'm actually going to go right to our website. It has a wonderful definition, but I'm going to try to pull out a little bit of the information rather than sitting here reading a lengthy paragraph. But the level of need was designed a number of years ago to have some standardized methodology of assessing individuals with whom we support, so that way we're able to allocate resources based on need more appropriately and equitably. The level of need itself is a tool that we try to capture information on individuals' personal care activities, their health and medical, daily living activities, behavior, safety, support for waking hours, overnight support, comprehension and understanding, communication abilities, transportation, social life, and so much more. So it is a relatively comprehensive assessment. Like everything in this world, it's not perfect. There is some flaws in the system, and it's not specific to Brian, but it is specific to certain types of need areas. So we try to tease that out through some of the questioning, but we're working towards an effective utilization of a level of need, so that way our resources we do have are equitably distributed to the people that we do support. So this gives us a foundation to work off of.
So who's involved in completing the LON?
So that could depend on the team themselves. Who is the team? Mm-hmm. So the primary folks would be the DDS case manager, the parent, the guardian, and the individual, most importantly. However, depending on who else is involved in that team, could it be somebody from the school system if they're still in the school?
Okay.
Or if they're connected with an employment or day provider or a residential provider. So that team can look much different person to person. So it's really dependent on who those pieces of the person's support life. At least a representative from each should be a part of that conversation. But we've had level of needs where persons from their faith-based organization also participated.
Right, yeah.
So it really depends on who that person wants as a part of that assessment review process.
So is this similar to a PPT meeting where all these people are sitting around a table, or is it like, what's the process look like?
So the level of need itself would be separate of like a planning meeting.
Okay.
So when you think about the level of need, you're thinking about it in a variety of different ways. We want to capture a baseline on the individual and all those areas I talked about earlier. And then that will help formulate some of the discussions for that planning meeting.
Okay.
So it's like one of those initial assessments in the PPT world that you bring those to the table to then start planning for that next year for that student. Same rules apply. We would do this level of need assessment prior to a planning meeting. That's brought to the planning meeting as one of the pieces of information to use for planning for the next year's worth of planning. So in our individual plan. So
is it a questionnaire for, say, the employment person, if like, how does that look?
So a level of need is multiple pages. Mm-hmm. There's sections in there that's really honed in on medical, as I mentioned, or honed in on behavioral or mental health needs of the individual. And there's also sections on day and residential care needs. So as each person, part of that team, depending on what role each of those members play, their feedback as those questions are asked is utilized to help with the scoring or notation of where that person falls. It's a multiple choice format.
Mm-hmm.
So the parent might be providing a lot of that residential information, or they might be somebody who's a nurse, if they're in a residential setting, might be providing the medical side. So it really depends on who that team is participating, who's answering what. But there is a section on that day side or employment side, and there's more information on the residential as well. So, but again, it's more of a conversation. It's not a one-on-one interview. Everybody's in the room or on the call together and answering that simultaneously. That's the best way to capture it, rather than having a fragmented conversation, because one person might see something here and respond differently to somebody else with respect to a particular question. And it allows for that fluid dialogue.
Right.
Really, where is the person functioning for question 21 or whatever it is?
So that's a good segue into another question I have. So, and this is something I think parents and caregivers have always struggled with, from when their children give birth to three or special ed preschool. So you fill out this form, or they're asking you these questions, and how my child may look at school or an employment setting is very different from when they're maybe in a day program setting, because, and especially at home, what they do at home, that's their comfort area. So they may kind of thrive at home, but they're not really independent. So how does a parent fill those questions out so it really gives a true overall understanding of their loved one? Does that make sense?
It makes sense. And we actually, if you looked at level of needs, say Brian, and it was completed by my parents and the school system, and then you look at a level of need completed by the day program, you're going to see differences. Parents tend to underrate their loved one. And it's a natural occurrence.
Right.
We see it time and time again. And there's no fault at that.
What do you mean by underrate, Brian?
They don't want to show their loved one, or they don't know how to truly answer the questions on how their loved one does question 31. What level of support for question 31? They basically see their child in a different light and needing often, more times than not, less support than what's truly needed. And I don't know if it's a natural parent thing or what it might be, it's a consistent phenomena.
Yeah. I've been there, where I remember when my son was young, I'm laughing as we're talking about this because it brings up so many memories for me. I mean, my son's now 24 years old, but those memories are right there. And, you know, when I think it was one of his transition meetings, leaving birth to three to go to the school system. And we had to go to Southern, I think, to do something with his hearing or speech. And he was having a good day. And I was like, what do I do? Do I like pinch him so he has a bad day? Like, because and so many parents feel that way, because we want them to have good days, but he may have only had one good day every 10 days, and it happened to fall on the day he's going to be evaluated. I'm like, they're not going to give him services. They're not going to. So these are the panic things, I think. And that doesn't go away for parents, that feeling. So I think that's where they underrate, because we do a lot for our kids when they're home. I mean, even now, and my son's very high functioning, and he's going to visit his father in Florida this week. I'm like, okay, so did you, he's like, I got this, mom, and I'm like, okay. But it's almost like a PTSD, where we remember some of the really bad things and the results of that. So I think some parents do that.
I think what it comes down to is removing yourself from that daily life activity that we're asking you about.
So what's a good way to explain that? Like, how do we get that message for myself if I'm talking to a parent that's going to be coming in and they're asking questions about the lawn? What is the best way for me to give them advice on how to answer those questions? Like, as simply as possible, so we can get
simple
the best
as possible.
Score. Yes.
Remove yourself from that activity. What level of support would Brian need?
I like that.
Doing that activity if you were not there.
We have an example. Like, I know I can see all 116 questions right now. So I know one of the questions is in regards to independence when eating. Does a person require hands-on assistance? Like, so how would you remove yourself from that? What advice, you know, should our listeners take to heart when it comes to a question like that?
Say, for example, you're going out to dinner and somebody's coming into your house to provide respite. Mm-hmm. So that way your loved ones care for you in your absence. And they had to do mealtime while you were going out to dinner. What instructions would you give them on how to support your son, your daughter, your family member during mealtime? And you'll be able to break down that event and start chipping away at what level of support the parent actually provides just through casual conversation and breaking down that daily activity, and as simple as that. And they'll start to see how much support or lack of support they actually provide their loved one during that activity by just breaking it down on how they would instruct Tisha to care for Brian during mealtime. So right. You may have to really systematically go question by question. If you're we're working through those questions with you, start systematically breaking the questions down in a different angle, a different direction. If we're finding that's it's going down the, oh, they can do this. They can do this perfectly. Oh, they eat independently, but we know at school that they have a personal care attendant with them during mealtimes because of potential choking issues or because they can't manipulate a fork. They need a plate guard, things like that. So we might have other information that works to our advantage to then have this more in-depth dialogue to break these questions down a little bit more. Mm-hmm. We just want honesty. And parents are giving it to us, but it's clouded just because it's their loved one. Mm-hmm. They don't want to have their loved one looked at being high need in so most that, cases. And yeah, that, because they, whether it be they don't want them to be labeled in a way, mm-hmm. or it's a realization of what the level of need their loved one actually has mm-hmm. of support.
That brings up a really good point, because what if when the results of that lawn is delivered to the family, and either they don't agree with the results or they're just upset with what that person is delivering to them. What kind of advice would you give to those families? Are there resources for them? And how's the LON results delivered to the family?
That's a good question.
So in most cases, we try to get the level of need after it's entered into our data system. We'll get them the actual hard copy and PDF of how all the answers went and the summary report. Two different documents. So after our case managers retrieve that information through the Q&A, they go into our data system, enter all the responses in, including who was participant in that level of need, because that's on one of the pages where they list the names mm-hmm. and their relationships to the individual. That document, once it's entered in the system, we can get that off in PDF format to the family or print it out if they don't have electronic means. We also will get them a summary report. And a summary report will give you the scoring and also identify some of those risk areas. We welcome families to give us feedback with respect to, you know, I'm looking at this and you didn't capture that question right, or I don't think I responded that way. We can have that back and forth dialogue. Our staff can go in and revise it.
So it can be changed if an answer doesn't, if they don't think they answered it.
Well, it's almost, good to know. Again, I go back to, you know, excuse me. My days with my son, and you know, you walk away from these things and it's in, and you keep replaying it in your head. You know, you're driving home from this. Okay. Did I answer that question right? And then you're like, oh no, I forgot to tell them this. So it's nice to know that there is a dialogue that after they do the initial results that, you know, the caregiver can say, you know, I thought about this question and I'd like to revise it this way.
Sometimes I always encourage, when I was a supervisor of case management, get the draft out.
Mm-hmm.
Before we mark it complete in our system, right. When we get that summary report, send a draft out in PDF. Have all the participants review it. It's best practice, obviously. And sometimes time crunches and schedules don't allow for this. Review it before we mark it complete and then put it in the system. But they can always go back and make those revisions if there's a glaring error And it may or may not affect the scoring, but we want an accurate reflection of who the person is. So something as simple as, you know, a 1 to a 2 on a medical support need, we want to make sure it's accurate. So we have a baseline of who that person is on that day that that assessment was completed. So,
so is the lawn similar at all to like the triannual? Do they do this every 3 years? Is it once a year?
So the level of need in theory should be reviewed at least annually.
Okay.
Okay. And I say at least annually in theory because we do have some folks who are supported on our helpline. They might have gotten a level of need done for particular circumstances where our helpline staff cannot do that on an annual basis. But when they get a case manager, that level of need is reviewed annually. And it could be a simple review. Has there been any updates to the last level of need? Mm-hmm. And there might be nothing. No changes. We just... Right. Clone it, mm-hmm, as we call it in our system, and just change the date on it, the same change the participants in this market complete. So there might be no scoring changes or any question changes whatsoever, but every year we go through that review process. Now, if you as a parent, Tisha, as you mentioned with your son, and something in you specifically, if you are a caregiver, changed, there's a section about caregivers.
Mm-hmm.
So having that information about a change in caregiver status does create a need to revise that. So that might happen during that 12-month cycle where we will go back in, do a new level of need, and make that revision at that time frame that that person notified us of that. So anytime between that review process and those 12 months, if there's changes to the person or even their caregiver, mm-hmm, status, that should be reported to us so we can update the level of need because it could affect services and supports that they're getting or not getting at the time. So,
so Brian, if you, I heard you mention the scoring a few times. Can you tell us what that scoring is? I mean, I know that there's numbers involved in this. Could you just break it down for our listeners?
As I mentioned, the level of need, once it's entered in our system, they just click a button, complete, and it goes through an algorithm. I'm not a mathematician. I don't know how it works. Don't quiz me on that. But it does generate a summary report. And it's multiple pages. And it really depends how many pages will depend on what the risk areas and things like that are. But at the end of the day, you'll see on page one, it's a kind of a graph of all those domains I kind of ran through earlier on, where the person falls on a score of 0 to 8.
Okay.
For each of those domain categories. And then it will go through some other information. It will identify risk areas based on some of the responses that we, the team, going back to how, mm-hmm, doing the assessment early before planning meeting, the team should look to address in the person's upcoming plan. And then it gives you scoring.
Okay.
And the scoring is based on a day, education day program, and home residential programming.
Okay.
So it gives you an overall composite score of where the person lands in that 0 to 8. And that composite score helps us as an agency then, if you came to us for services or support requests for an employment or day service, we'll look at that composite score and it puts a funding parameter for us to work with so that everybody who's a level of need 4 for a day is getting equitable resources based on their needs. And it's, there's not a wide range of level 4 getting this to this. It gives us a range to work in, a cap. We always use the lawn cap,
mm-hmm,
in our language and our, internally and externally. So, but we do look at the behavior presently. We do look at the behavioral score on that first page I mentioned to see if that behavioral score, if it comes up higher than the composite score, say, for example, if you're going for employment or day money, and your composite score is a 4. We look at the behavior score and it's a 5 or say a 6. We will use the behavior score for our lawn cap funding.
What's the difference between a 5 or a 6?
What's funding wise?
Yeah. What's the highest?
You said 0 to 8.
But what's
8's
the
highest?
That's the highest level of need.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. So as an 8, that will get you additional resources,
mm-hmm,
over,
okay,
anybody,
mm-hmm,
below.
Okay.
I will say this, there's not many 8s,
mm-hmm,
in the world of DDS, and the ones who do score as 8s are definitely,
mm-hmm,
significantly in need. So, but we do look at all those components. Behavior is the only category that will trump our planning fiscally for somebody that trumps,
okay,
that composite score.
Mm-hmm.
So And sometimes people ask, well, my son or daughter or my family members got a 6 for behavior score and their home is 4. Well, the day, if you're asking for day money, we look at it in comparison to day. We don't look at it holistically unless you're asking for home and day. So okay, depending on what you're asking for resources, we'll compare that composite number to the behavior score. So, because as we alluded earlier, that behavior score might be like a 2 at home or res and a 5 at day.
Exactly.
So it can vary, again, based on that responses. So based on what you're asking for, that's when we do that comparison between the composite and the actual day.
So that scoring sounds really important when it comes to the LON. It's my understanding that individuals that have a score between 1 and 5, that the expectation is that they're going to be in a vocational program. Can we talk a little bit about that?
Sure. So several years ago, our administration, and let's kind of roll back the answer to this. We are, as DDS, we are an employment first agency. So correct, we strive for promoting the opportunities and assisting individuals that we support with getting meaningful employment in their communities. So our administration at the time made the decision that if you had a level of need score of 1 to 5, that the teams, the individual and their team should be looking at employment as the primary focus. So there's a lot of conversations around that. Some folks, there is no conversation because that's their direction. That's what they want to do. Mm-hmm. It's been their direction. That's been the conversation
point. They want to earn a paycheck. They want to get that job.
Exactly. They might have, you know, we're already connected with the Bureau of Rehabilitation Services, et cetera. So some of those is just, it is what it is. It's a natural process, a natural flow for them to go that way. Others, it's a little bit more of a conversation and yes, I want to pursue that. And for some, no, not right now, or they might have been determined ineligible for BRS because they need to work on some of those employment skill sets. So we do have employment transitional services available in our system to help those who are kind of on that line of, I want to pursue employment, but I got to enhance some of my skills to make myself ready for the workforce and then go back to BRS and have that conversation and work with them, with us jointly to get myself employment opportunity. And for others, they might go through that service and then find that employment is not right for them now and look at other options in our system. Okay. So we do have a variety of different employment-focused supports and day-focused supports based on the person's level of need. But we do have an inherent expectation. There should be conversations with individuals, regardless of level of need, about employment. And those who are 1 to 5, it's a little bit more of an enhanced conversation about what is that pathway? Mm-hmm. Where are we going? Did you have a conversation with BRS? Did they complete that 511 review under the Workforce Innovation Opportunities Act? And where did that, what's that outcome? So we work hand in hand with them and with the teams to figure out what that pathway is going to be. But employment is one of those forefront conversations as we're deciding, going from school into adult services, what is that pathway going to be for each individual? And it's an individual conversation.
So the pathway sounds fantastic. What if you get that individual, though, that even with the team supporting them, let's say they're along 4 or 5, and they just truly don't want to work. They've expressed to the team, they've told DDS, I don't want to work, I don't ever want to work. How should the conversation go forward with that team when they're adamant that even though their LON dictates that they should really take that pathway, they truly don't want to?
So we respect those decisions. However, the conversation should be every year during planning conversations about employment. So then we roll back and look at what service options in our system could that person use their level of need funding for day services based on their choice not to immediately pursue employment. So there's options internally for them to pursue. But again, that conversation should be occurring every single year at planning meetings about employment. What are your employment goals? Do you still, you know, have a disinterest in pursuing employment? And if so, why? Or do you have interest now? Let's get you connected. So it shouldn't be a one and done conversation. It's a fluid conversation. It's an annual conversation.
And the individual's case manager will always bring that up annually so they can always revisit that employment.
It is an internal expectation that there should be an employment goal in everybody's individual plan.
That's good. Just so our listeners understand, you know, that yes, the case manager might initiate that conversation, but their feedback and presence regarding that is just as important.
Mm-hmm. Most definitely. And it could be a person with a long 6, 7, or even 8.
Right.
The conversation should be happening, you know, and there might be a simple goal that might be, you know, baseline to get that employment conversation happening or to achieve a potential employment goal. And we have individuals who might not meet the definition of competitive employment who are working in our communities.
Mm-hmm.
And they might have a higher level of support on the job, but they have a job in the community. It might be a one-on-one, so it might be our individualized day vocational focus service. But that in and of itself doesn't meet a definition of competitive employment to which BRS, as I mentioned earlier, that they strive for. So it might take on a different appearance, but they're still having employment in the community as part of their weekly program. So everything's individualized. Just, you know, working through the team on that conversation is what the critical piece is, and how, what service in our system can we align with what that target, what those goals of that individual are.
Definitely not a one size fits all
program. Absolutely not. No, I don't think there's two programs alike. So.
That's good to know. It starts a good conversation with the team.
Mm-hmm. And they go back about if there was a question of, or a disagreement about the level of need, have families speak to the case managers and or their supervisors about a disagreement. Do have procedures internally to work through some of those conversations beyond that parent or caregiver and case manager conversation. So if there is a concern, they can work it through the quote unquote chain of command and get the direction about appealing a level of need, specifically a particular question or the overall scoring, etc.
That's excellent.
It's very rare. I'll say that. It's very, very rare, but it has happened on occasion.
Yeah. Brian, thank you so much again for taking time out of your busy schedule. 2 months in a row to come. And we're thinking down the road, we may, you know, pick on you again to come visit us, because this is just such great information to share with everyone.
It really is.
It's my absolute pleasure, and I welcome the opportunity. So just let me know.
Thank you.
As always, you can find our podcast on Podbean, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and the Star Inc. website. On any Amazon or Alexa-enabled devices, you can ask Alexa to play 99% Effective, Sarah Solutions Podcast. And let us know what you want to learn more about. If you have an idea or topic, let us know. We would love to hear from you.